Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's PolicyGenius.com.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Well, I'll tell you, Ben, I almost didn't make it today.
What happened?
Well, I'll tell you, I was like really sore from this weekend, you know?
Oh yeah, yeah. You've been pumping iron?
Yeah, well, not quite. I competed in a Beyblade tournament myself.
What?
No way. I know.
Someone call ESPN.
not quite. Oh my gosh, no. There's a, as you guys maybe have heard, as we've talked about it a few times, there's a monthly Beyblade tournament that'll happen in Roanoke, and I've been bringing the kids, you know, if they want to go.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I remember the great incident of 25 when one Luke William completely shattered another player.
Still spoken about, you know.
Yeah, that's right. I know. Yeah, I
mean, they legends.
They couldn't even get the broken bits of Beyblade out of the stadium.
So deep were they embedded in the plastic. My goodness.
This is like what? Like 16th inch plastic?
I mean, it's thick enough. It would be like you'd need scissors to cut through it for sure.
Right. Yeah.
But anyway, so last time I brought Nick and Nate, but this time I was telling the kids, I was like, hey, it's Beyblade tomorrow. If you guys want to go, they're having another tournament. And Luke was immediately like, yes, let's go. But then surprisingly, neither Nick or Nate wanted to go.
Really?
I know. I think maybe they're just not quite like strong enough to like really like beat people.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
So it's like less fun if you're just like not winning anything. But at that point, you know, it's like one of those things where it's like, well, once you say it, you can't really put the toothpaste back in the tube. So
yes, 100%.
Yeah. It's like, gotta be really careful. Like everyone's good. Okay. And then, so I was just going to I just brought Luke. But as it's like a, you know, 3 to 4 hour endeavor.
Is it that long?
I mean,
it's a big chunk of Saturday.
It takes up like a good portion of the afternoon. We were probably there from like, you know, we left the house at like 11:30 and we probably got home at like 4:15 or something.
Wow. So, okay.
Yeah. It takes a minute. I think it could be run faster, but I'll save those thoughts, you know.
Okay. Maybe stay after, speak with the leadership.
Blaze, that's his name.
No. Blaze is the person.
People go by their, you know, blade handles.
Do they really?
I mean, they kind of do. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I thought you were joking because there's the movie Dodgeball with Ben Stiller that came out. I say Ben Stiller as if like Vince Vaughn's not the main character.
Right.
But yeah, they like, I feel like the entire team on Ben Stiller's side is like laser and blazer and
taser. My personal consigliere, Michelle.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my gosh. If you guys haven't seen Dodgeball.
Well, probably an instant classic. Hopefully it's aged well.
Absolutely an instant classic. Who knows if it's aged well, but I'll tell you what. There was a time between the years of 2004 3 in 2006 where you couldn't take three steps without someone quoting Dodgeball and or Anchorman at you.
You couldn't dodge it like you couldn't dodge a wrench.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the characters in the movie were good at dodging balls, but you were not good at dodging those quotes. Nor would you even want to be because they were hilarious.
Exactly. Bring them on.
Bring them on.
Is what the people of 2003 once said.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Bring it on. A whole different movie about cheerleading with Kirsten Dunst.
Right. True. Anyway, so we're off track.
You're
hanging with Blaze at the Beyblade tournament at Blade Gaming.
It's so great that it's called Blade Gaming and they have Beyblade tournaments there.
It is. Yeah. Hosted by Blaze.
Hosted by Blaze. Yeah. He's the organizer.
I hope you know this all sounds made up, by the way.
It is absolutely not.
No, I know it's not. Yeah. But it doesn't sound real.
I know it doesn't. But it is. So me and Luke roll up and I was trying to sign myself up because like if I got to be here all afternoon, you know, just the act of like monitoring the three kids is like enough to keep me busy the whole time.
Naturally.
Like there's someone playing most of the time or whatever. But this time I was like, it's just going to be Luke. And, you know, like there was like 26 people in the tournament and they only have like 5 battle stations. So it was like there was some downtime in between and stuff.
If I'm not mistaken, when you do your Pokemon tournaments at the same locale,
yeah,
that would seem like a great turnout, 26 people.
It would be. That would be like one of the biggest that it ever turned out. Yeah.
Right. Like I am surprised that the Beyblade tournament is attracting more folk than the Pokemon tournament.
Frankly, so am I.
Is Pokemon not like one of the Pikachu is not like one of the most recognizable images on the planet?
I think Pikachu is the most recognizable fictional character on the planet. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I think he surpassed Mickey Mouse. Yeah.
Whoa. Okay. So
weird that they're both mice. But
also strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently we humans are like, we don't really like standard grade, right, you know, mice. But like if you kind of give them like a little bit of like whimsy, a little bit of adorable, maybe a little bit of like cheek blush, you know, then we're kind of like, okay,
all right,
count us in. One of them's electrical. No problem.
Yeah. Yeah. There it's much better. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, when I left it, there was the Pokemon tournament I would have usually gone to back in the day. Was downstairs and it looked more well attended than usual.
Okay.
So maybe that's on the rise too. But in any case, yes, this is the third one we've been to. Each one's been bigger than the last. So the sport, as it were, the gear sports, that's what they call themselves.
Gear sports. Okay.
Gear sports. Yeah. It's on the rise, especially here. Someone I know at least traveled up from North Carolina to play in this one.
Holy cow. Okay.
I know.
Okay. So we're learning the lore.
Who knew?
Of the Blades.
I know. Like they must be doing a good job. I also got an email to my email account this week before I'd even signed up for this one, because when we signed the kids up, I think like they have to have an email address to have an account or whatever.
Okay.
Which of course they don't. So me and Beth just like used ours or whatever. So I think my email address is linked to Nick's, I think.
Okay.
So I got an email earlier this week informing me that Nick had been invited to a tournament to compete for a spot elsewhere. And I was like, that's hilarious.
Wow.
I know. I was like, but it's like, I've never gotten such an email from Pokemon, you know?
Right. Yeah. Like they're never trying to like send you up to the big leagues or anything. They're like, I mean, yeah, minor league's fine.
Yeah. They're like, we don't need to advertise our regional tournaments because they're hard to sign up for anyway. So
they're well attended,
but Beyblade is like, they're going after it.
It's kind of like a fun time to be involved.
It is. It is. You know? Yeah. It's very grassroots.
As it's like, you know, emerging.
Yeah. It is kind of cool to see it like emerging as like its own little thing. So anyway, as I was signing myself up, I was like, okay, I'll just go in and like change the name. But apparently that's the only thing you can't change. So all weekend at the Beyblade tournament, I was just Nick. That's what people were calling me.
You know, now that you say it, like if you introduce yourself and it's like, what's up, I'm Nick, I'd be like, yeah.
Yeah, of course you are.
Like,
yeah.
Like there is something about like, you know, we talk about name of the wind all the time and like the true name for things. So often I feel like it is the case that like people look like their names. Like I don't know how to describe it, but it's like, you know, they're like, hi, I'm Julian. I'm like, yeah, you are.
Yeah. Like, of course you are.
Yeah, like
it tracks.
You go, Julie.
Well, Nick is amongst our children the one who looks the most like me anyway.
Okay.
So
okay.
maybe so there's something to it.
Maybe there is something to it. Yeah. You could be a Nick in a different life.
I know. So there I was, Nick Carlin on the Beyblade scene.
Wow.
just letting it rip, as it were. Me and Luke headed out. And because Nick and Nate didn't come, our pool of available parts that we didn't have to split amongst three people,
right,
was way better. So we could have much more like built out competitive things.
So when you guys went back to like the pit lane or whatever to like, you know, to dig through to find, you know, mm-hmm. what you needed, you're like, oh, I got some upgrades.
Exactly. Yes.
This is good. Yes. This is good. Okay.
I know. So, and like they do not love listening to me, like, cause I'll, you know, watch the videos and like look up like what are like the, you know, S tier builds and stuff. Naturally. What's the meta?
Right.
You know, cause I know they need every advantage they can get because they're just not strong enough to rip it.
Sure.
As strong as like some of the other kids or, you know, adults that might be playing.
Do they know the terms either S tier or meta?
I don't know if they know those terms.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So you're
I gotta be like, no, look, this is really good. Believe me.
Right.
Like, trust me, this is the best. And they'll be like, no, we've had that one forever. It's like, I've gotten so many new ones since then. It's like, I don't know what to tell you. They released Wizard Rod too early, guys. That's all there is to it. Okay. It's too good. Yeah.
Oh, them's the breaks.
Them's the breaks. And it'd be like, I think you should be playing this left spinner because like it's good. And they're like, I don't like that one. It's like, but maybe you should.
Right. Yeah. Like, let me just nudge it to your side of the table.
Let me just
reconsider it. Yeah. I'm gonna take these. You only have one left. Why don't you just go play with that one?
Just go play that one. So anyway, I didn't have to worry about any of that. I just had to make my own decisions. Except here's what I ran into is that like I was like, Luke, just, you know, take whatever you want. I'll help you build them. You can build them whatever. And he had his little three blades that he wanted to use. And I was like, okay, with what we've got left, I can construct for myself what I know to be competitive things.
Yeah.
But then, of course, as soon as I do that, Luke's like, but I want to trade. I want to use that one. It's like, it's not really about me, so I'll trade you. Of course, you can use whatever you want.
Right. So as soon as you put your dad stamp of approval, yeah. It's sort of like, well, now
exactly
that left spinner starting
now,
to look kind of cool.
Wait a second. So there's that, but that's totally fine. We had more than enough to make six competitive blades.
Good.
Or whatever. So I was going in and there were five rounds of Swiss.
Okay.
To make top cut or whatever.
We the listeners of the J.
Yeah.
I was gonna say of the pop, but like I feel like I am part of the pop, but yeah. like I would include myself with the colonels that have listened to you describe such things as Swiss.
Swiss.
You know, and I picture cheese every time.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
Swiss is a tournament style of play.
Right.
Wherein it is not a bracket. It's not like, you know, one person beats one person and then the loser is eliminated.
Okay.
Swiss would be that there are five rounds and like that means everyone will play five rounds no matter what.
Is it, would you argue it's a better way to ensure that like somebody doesn't get like a bad seed? Like, because if you're in like round one, you know, like if you look at like March Madness and you've got like a one seed versus a 16 seed, it's like there's some like, you know, basis for that because like the 16 seed very unlikely is going to beat the one seed, but also the 16 seed is probably the like by the rules and laws of competitive play the least likely to make it further. So it's
right.
Like, you know, if you can upset a one seed then great, and it's sort of an advantage to being a one seed because you get to play like the easiest competition.
But yeah,
I can imagine that like if you're at a Pokemon tournament and you sit down across from the guy who's going to win the whole thing and it's right. Like, well, I'm guaranteed to lose this one.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, and that's kind of a bummer for me, average Joe, who just came here to like have fun. Not,
yeah,
I mean, I'm sure there's some fun in playing the best possible player.
There absolutely is. But like Swiss is a really great way for like card shops and stuff to run tournaments because one, like if people come out and this is how they want to spend their Saturday, it guarantees you'll get to play in like four or five rounds or whatever.
Okay, that's good.
And if you only have like 12 to 15 people, then just playing four rounds at all will typically yield, like you're not going to have two people with the best record normally.
Okay.
It's like someone will clearly have had the best record by the end and that'll just be the winner.
Okay.
But ideally, if it's like a bigger number of people, then Swiss is a good way to determine like who your top like eight are going to be, and then those eight people will play in like more of a bracket style.
I see.
And
okay.
The seeds will come from how they did in Swiss.
I see. Okay. That gives you like a regular season, if you will.
Exactly. Yeah. So you sort of play out your regular season and then you go into the playoffs or whatever.
Got it. Okay. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what it is. So the first player I'm up against is someone, I think he was like 8 years old.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, all right. Feels like I should have this, but I wasn't going to take anything for granted because.
So no no mercy.
No. Well, Ben, let me tell you, this kid was making fast friends with Luke. Like between rounds, they were just like playing with each other and stuff, which was great.
Yeah, good, I love
Brad,
that.
He made
yeah.
a little buddy. This was the kid who had traveled up from North Carolina.
Oh, no way.
And he has been traveling with his dad to a Beyblade tournament every single week all over Virginia and North Carolina.
Whoa.
And like, this is like their jam.
Okay,
and so him and his dad also competing. And he was telling me before everything even began that he's like, oh yeah, I've made like top cut at like my last four tournaments in a row. And I was like, okay, wow, impressive.
That is impressive.
Like this kid doesn't, he's not messing around.
No,
you know?
he's here to play.
He's here to play, and he was there to play, Ben.
So he probably knows meta and S tier.
I think he knew things like meta and S tier, and he knew like, you know, the competitive builds and stuff like that. So I'm like squaring up against this kid, and I'm like, oh God, you know, can't lose to this kid, you know.
Okay.
And I did not. I did win. I handed him his first loss in like 3 weeks or something.
Whoa.
Which was, you know, great,
Did you like, well, like sneak away to the restroom and do a quiet little like, yes, like,
oh, man,
little
geez.
Fist pump. Yeah. Like,
bam, got him.
Right.
Take that, kid.
Small child just trying to
small child.
Be confident and enjoy something with her dad.
No, he was such a good sport about it. He was great.
That's awesome.
That was good. And he was just having fun playing with Luke the whole time anyway. So shout out to that kid. Wherever you are now,
wherever you may be,
somewhere in North Carolina, I reckon. And then round two, I was against like maybe a more like adult player.
Okay.
Yeah, because now you're playing against. So it's the way Swiss works is that you'll play typically people with the same record as you. So if you've like won the first round, you'll play against other people who won the first round or whatever.
I see. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So then it'll continue to break down and filter itself
continue
out.
Continue to cut the cheese.
It'll continue to cut the cheese as it were. And this was like a significantly more. I mean, it was. I cannot tell you, Ben, the visceral experience of playing competitive Beyblades. Okay.
Visceral.
I mean, like me and we've played here in the office, you know,
oh, yeah,
just
naturally.
Having fun, like, you know, 1, 2, 3, go or whatever. We'll watch them spin and clank into each other and whatnot. Like when people are there and like, they are there to like compete to like, this isn't just like, you know, we're spinning blades in the office or whatever. They're like going for it.
Okay. Real deal. Know? Yeah.
Real deal. And like, I'm certainly not like the super most qualified person when it comes to all of like the meta stuff, but like everyone there was running almost the same, like 3 or 4 blades. You're sort of running into like, okay, these are the ones. And it quickly became apparent that like, again, like, okay, I knew. And the way it works is like you line up your deck, your 3 in a row, and you have to choose one and they choose one. You have to go in order or whatever. So like it became obvious that everyone had this one thing called like the shark edge. That was like, that's like the new kid on the block.
Oh, love it.
The new top of it. And it quickly became apparent that shark edge was going to beat me unless I played it against my golem blade.
Okay.
And so I was like, okay, I got to try and really predict when they're going to put the shark edge in their deck and try and line it up there.
Right.
Like that was my main strategy. And I was able to do it a bunch of times.
So you were able to like literally like, walk me through what that looks like, because you must have been like trying to like could you like see like their like little like roster being like laid out, and you're sort of like, okay, so they're running shark edge second, so I'm going second. Or
I mean, because they'll tell you to like shuffle your stuff and stuff, and like, you know, I would remember where it was the first time, and if they just moved like the two to the one spot, I would just be like, you know,
okay.
You know, but if they were like more covert about it, then it'd be harder to do.
This is the kind of strategy stuff that never occurs to me. I'm blown away that you're always just like, you're taking in every morsel of information.
Trying to do my best. And I was able to beat the shark edge in that way a bunch of times. And then I had the left spinner that no one ever wants to use. And it's like, the reason you play that is because of the other one I mentioned, the wizard rod. This is like it's
kryptonite.
It is good at beating the wizard rod. And I'll tell you what, I also managed to line up on that one a bunch of times. And I'll tell you what, even though this is supposed to be the answer to wizard rod, it wasn't.
Really?
I know. Like it would still be really close.
Wow.
I know. I was so frustrated on that front. It was like, you had one job, dude. One job. Like, what are you doing here?
I brought you. Right.
I vouched for you.
Now all the kids are over there like, see, Dad, we told you.
See, we told you. Like, it's no good. It's no
like,
good.
Yeah, it's like you're watching all the videos, but we have repetitions. We've put in our 100 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's a small little like, you know, 10,000 hours joke.
Of course.
But they're small children. So
yeah,
we'll call it 100 hours.
Yes. And then, Ben, I was getting ridiculed because I also was running Wizard Rod myself.
You got ridiculed.
Well, because there's there's the blade itself, and then there's like a ratchet and a bit, and the bit is what it spins on.
Yeah,
there's a bunch of different shapes.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So forever, wizard on ball has been the move.
I can picture it.
Of course.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like I'm right in there.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the name of the bit, ball. Apparently, Hexa has come in here lately. And I can't tell you how many games I had of Wizard Rod versus Wizard Rod, except that I was on ball and they were on Hexa. And I cannot tell you how many people brought up and they're like, you're still on ball? And I was like, bro, chill.
You're still on ball?
Still on ball? I got Hexa on Golem, dude, okay? Jeez, man.
I registered poorly, okay? That's it.
Yeah. My name's not even Nick. How does that make you feel?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
My name's not even Nick. That's my son who didn't want to come today.
Who didn't want to come today. So I'm representing him. So anyway, I made it through the first two rounds with wins.
Okay.
I managed to defeat Wizard Rod on ball on Hexa with Wizard Rod on ball. That was a great moment.
I mean, I can imagine that after all this trash talk and smack and everything that's been going on, that you probably were letting out like a bit of a, like an exuberance.
I was. I mean, I was like, I was really excited when I won the second round, Ben. Like the tenseness, like I was literally sore the next day on my shoulders from like pulling so hard on like trying to play. That's, I could not believe it.
That is crazy. Like, yeah. I mean, on some level, I'm like, wow, that is hilarious. And also like there's a piece of me that kind of understands it, because I remember going to my first ever climbing like competition, my first and only, by the way.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I think I was a pretty good climber at the time, and I was like, I'm gonna show up and like excel at this, like this is yeah. gonna like I'm never good in that capacity.
Yeah.
And I remember I got there and I was so determined to not take multiple attempts at every climb that I was over gripping the wall like crazy.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, I would be climbing up something that for all intents and purposes per my skill level was a ladder. Like I could climb it no problem, you know, but I was holding on to every single hold as if my life depended on it.
Right.
And what happened was my warm-up climbs, which were just basic, like touching the wall climbs, like I gassed myself. So then I was getting to like hard stuff and I couldn't hold anything. And it was like, normally this would not be an issue for me.
Right.
You know, but the competition's got me like, it's in my head.
It got you in your head. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, continue.
But anyway, so yeah, I ended up, I won the second round, and then I got into the third round, and I could tell I was coming up against people who really maybe knew. I mean, the guy in the second round knew what he was doing too. He was also a judge. So
oh, wow.
he knew what was going on.
A little bit of a conflict of interest for him to be involved.
I would agree with that, you know? Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's the one talking smack over Hex instead of all?
No, that was the act. He wasn't judging our match, but he was competing against me. The guy who was judging also was talking smack though.
No way.
I was like, guys, ball is still good. Ball is still cool. okay.
I'm not old.
I'm not old, and I am running Hex on a different blade, okay?
Thank Got you very it? Much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Jeez, no one else is running Golem Hex, I didn't see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Got into the third round, though. I could this guy, also. I was watching him. I could watch the math happening in his head as he would be like, okay, I see what you're running. This is what I am. And he would like, his like launch technique would be different based on like what he was against and stuff.
So literally, as you've been talking, like the thing that's been going through the back of my mind for like how we get you better at your game,
yeah,
was to go through and take like almost like a laser level that you would use for like hanging like photos, mm-hmm. or like something straight along the wall, and projecting it down onto the dome and creating like quadrants, and then having like little almost like if you could imagine like a radar that would show you like enemy ship incoming or something,
right?
Like like going through and doing like 100 reps on each quadrant to see like where the landing zone like dictates the ultimate performance,
all that sort of stuff. But then it's not just the landing, it's also like the angle at which you're holding your hand as it goes in.
Okay, so we need like some type of like compass type situation,
something like on, like, put a compass on there, like have a little level.
Yes.
Oh
yeah,
my gosh, like oh, what do you got there? Yeah.
Yep. It's like,
that'd be hilarious. That's not a bad idea, honestly.
Okay.
This guy had practiced it, because as I mentioned, there was the Shark Edge, the new cool blade on the block or whatever. What I noticed, but the difference between the kids using Shark Edge and the adults using it was all the adults would angle it so that as it was spinning, it was like tilting over.
Okay.
And the idea being that it's really low to the ground, and then if it hits what it's aiming for is the like almost the bit on the other one. So it's trying to like pop it off, you know.
I'm now all of a sudden also mentally comparing the sport of Beyblades to not Rock'em Sock'em Robots. It's like Robot Wars.
What was it? Yeah.
You know what you mean. You know what I'm talking about.
BattleBots.
Like, BattleBots. BattleBots. Because I feel like with BattleBots, like when those first came out, I feel like what was really cool was like imagine like a cool thing that had like big weapons, but then it almost seemed like as the sport continued, what more and more people realized was you wanted to be like unflippable. So more and more of the bots started to look like almost like a Roomba type configuration. Like it was very low, very flat,
right,
hard to get underneath. And it was like, it would just have like, you know, stainless steel roof. So even if you dropped like a chainsaw blade on it or whatever, it was just sort of like, you're just sending sparks. You're
just not too bad. Right.
You can't hurt me.
Right. It's just going to forklift you.
Right.
Know?
Yes. Yeah. It's going to forklift. Cause the goal was to flip the other thing.
Right.
So all like, you know, big scary blades is one thing, but really what you want is to get underneath and just like toss them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, BattleBots.
Yeah.
So fun.
Right. Anyway, I'm sorry. I keep interrupting your
That's
story.
Fine, dude. I could talk about BattleBots for a while. I remember watching that show and being like, man, this is so cool. This is clearly what I'm going to do when I'm an adult.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I have one destiny and it's BattleBots.
This is it. I will be BattleBotting. It's going to be awesome. Like, if they're building this, like, imagine how much time and effort it's taking these adults here in the 90s to build these BattleBots. Imagine the technology when I'm an adult.
Right.
It'll probably be easy to build them.
No, not even an issue. Not even an issue. Yeah. And yet, you know, here we are at age... like 35 and 37 respectively.
Yeah.
And we've not even built a single battle bot.
Well, I have not built one single battle bot.
I don't even know what we're doing with our lives. Anyway.
I don't know.
So you've got these guys though who are launching Shark Launcher.
Shark Edge.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And this the third round, it went back and forth a little bit, but ultimately I did not get the win. This guy knew what he was doing. I know.
This is not how I expected the story to go.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ben. I didn't get the win. I know.
Wow.
Tragic.
So round three. So then you're paired up against all the other two and ones.
It was my round three, but I actually had a bye for the very first round, which was frustrating.
Oh, that is frustrating.
I know. So this is actually round four, but my round three. So now I'm going into round five and I'm like, okay, all right. Basically, I need to win if I want to get into top cut. Cause I was at eighth place on the leaderboard at that point. I was like, basically it's win or go home.
Yeah.
It's win or go home. And I'm in the round and I lose the first set and I was like, oh man, this is rough.
Right. Devastation reigns.
Fortunately, I was able to predict what blades he was going to do for the second set, made the adjustments, got the win in the second set.
Got the dub.
Came down. Now we're in set number three, first to 4 points wins,
okay,
right?
Yeah.
And I mean, it was so back and forth. It came down to we each had 3 points in the final set.
Goodness gracious.
And it was my left spinning blade against the wizard rod.
No.
And I was like, okay, I've got the matchup. I've got it.
Right.
Like, this is what I brought this for. It has worked out well. Rip it as hard as I can, hope for the best. And it came down to a spin finish, whatever, which is just last one spinning. And I did not get it. And I was like, God, you had one job. Why? Oh, so frustrating. But that was it. That was my Beyblade tournament experience. So I didn't make it to the top eight.
So, but on the first tournament, did Luke not make it to the top
Luke
eight?
Luke did.
Wow.
I know. So, he presently has the highest place finish at a Beyblade tournament in the family.
In the family. That's amazing. Was it eighth?
It was me.
No, was he eighth?
He was eighth.
When it all came down. So he made top cut, but then was the first man out.
Right.
Okay,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, so aspirations for the Carlin fam.
Who knew?
This is great. This is great. How did Luke do though?
He didn't do as well.
No.
I mean, he had a couple of like set wins, but I don't think he had any like match wins.
So this is like one of those things where I feel like that first tournament you went to, you could look at it one of two ways. Either it went best possible case scenario where Luke like literally broke someone else's blade and became like the star of the day.
Yeah.
And it's like best possible scenario. Like I always think about dad taking us fishing on the James River for the first time and like in the canoe and we caught like 50 fish and it was like one of the best fishing days, hard stop, of my life
ever.
And I've basically spent every day fishing since then just chasing that dream again.
Right.
And so it's like for like, I feel like if you're dad in that moment, it's like, this could not have gone better. Like, you know, best case scenario, he had like gone through and sold, like he was doing a story in collaboration with this like local flea flea market in town, and there was like a store that had like all these like specialty Hot Wheels, and he was selling his Hot Wheels like on eBay, which was like a brand new thing.
Right.
He used the proceeds to go and buy our Winona canoe.
Yep.
The first ever canoe our family owned. He brought us out there. We're on the river just slaying, you know. Yeah. It was so best case scenario.
Yes.
And I think it just really instilled like a love for, you know, tossing a line as a
Yeah.
Way.
Yeah.
But then I feel like you've also got the bar got set so high on that first experience where it's like, how do you get it back?
Right.
Because I mean, we've ripped a lot of blades and we're grown adults and have, I mean, I don't know, like I imagine pretty peak power,
right,
as far as like pulling blades is right. concerned, and we've never done that.
Yeah.
So it's like the chances of him ever breaking someone else's blade ever again are pretty low.
I know, right? It was just like who knows what magic happened to make it so.
Right.
But it did, and it was great.
And it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. I will, it is possible that my ripcord was like missing a few, like the judges kept being like, you might want to get a new ripcord. I can hear some like striation in there.
So, no way.
As it were. Yeah.
So, okay. This is like another interesting one. Cause the same thing with like a bike chain. It's like, you know, you go through and they've got these really fun tools. Like if you've ridden your bike a lot, they'll like check to see like the spacing and stuff. So like, see like how much wear is happening. It's like when you need like a new chain. And that's like the type of thing when I was a kid, it was just like, you just ride your bike forever. And if the chain breaks, then you probably just like throw it into like a burning pile of dumpster fire. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, like that's the end of the bike.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you don't replace the chain. It's like, if it breaks, it's like the bike broke. You know, so like now you're into like the maintenance stage.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this would just be like replacing a part, but it's possible I was losing a little bit of power on that.
So I'm going to say beyond a shadow of a doubt. Beyond
a shadow of a doubt.
You definitely were. Come on now. You had some striation.
Had some striation in there. Can't have that. Got to have full contact with the gear on the ripcord. So.
So where do you think like this stands? Like, so Luke obviously went. I feel like the story was more about your experience this particular go round.
Sure. Yeah.
Did Luke still have a great time?
He still had a blast. Yeah. I mean, he made a friend there, and his friend ended up still making Top Cut. So
did he really?
He did. He came back. He came back after his devastating loss to me.
Wow.
And beat his other opponents. So.
Okay.
Good for him.
Good for him. Yeah. I know. Like, oh man, that's hilarious. Do you aspire at all to be like that kid and his dad and just like go like tour the
I don't think I'm trying to tour Beyblades.
The Mid-Atlantic region.
No. And honestly, I don't think I would just go by myself to go do it. It would really have to be like this kind of situation.
A father-son.
A father-son situation. I'm not just like, kids, I'm heading down to Beyblades. Anyone want to come?
Right, right. Yeah.
Nope. Like, okay, well, see you in a bit. You know?
All of a sudden, Jay is like, he's like having to like tell his friends, like, I'm going on tour. Like, oh, doing like the podcast thing again? Like, no, no.
Oh, no.
Beyblades.
Beyblades, dude.
I'm doing the circuit.
It's getting insane.
Yeah.
It's getting insane.
There's a Tuesday night thing going on out in
right. We're heading down to Raleigh, and then this Saturday we're back here in our hometown, and then on Wednesday we're gonna head over to Norfolk, and it's gonna be
that's right, the traveling circus of
the traveling circus, yeah,
of you know, Beyblade mm-hmm. set up and takedown.
Exactly.
Load in must be a really like yeah. Like quite the pain.
I know. The good news is we probably don't look like the most legit, because you know, some people have like full on deck boxes and stuff and very official things. We've just got like little like Ziploc bags holding our blades.
You gotta rectify that like immediately.
I know. Well, I would as well, but like the deck boxes you can buy downstairs are like made of the flimsiest plastic ever and still cost like $30. And I'm like, this is nonsense.
Nonsense.
I know. Like, I'm not paying for that. Like, can you go on Etsy or something, you know?
Right.
Exactly.
Sounds like a great great holiday. Like on the horizon, maybe, mm-hmm. maybe each of the boys is getting their own deck box.
Oh, that does seem like a very good kind of thing to get for them. Yeah. I can tell you what, we have a Shark Edge coming our way.
Do you? Yeah. It's like, we're not messing around.
We are behind. Yeah.
Right.
I know what I'm getting Luke for his birthday. Yep.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And he'll immediately be like, but I don't like this one. I'm like, yes, you do.
False. False.
Try again. Come back later.
Try again.
Yeah. You love it.
Exactly. You love it. You're going to love it. You know what you're going to love? Winning.
Winning.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to feel good.
It's going to feel good.
Right.
Yeah. If we even go back. So I don't even, who knows? Maybe he'll have moved on from this one.
Ma'am.
But there we go. That was my lone experience competing in a Beyblade tournament, doing the full on. Like, there's a lot of times at like Pokemon tournaments where it's like, there's like a word for this where it's like the Pokedads, and it's the exact same thing.
Wow.
Like, their kids are into it, but they got to be there the whole time. So they just play.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas then you got me, who's just there, who's just their age also with no kids doing it.
Right.
Right. Just playing. But I'm sort of like, I can't wait till I'm bringing the kids to Pokemon tournaments. That'd be great.
I mean, it's been like one of those things that's felt so like on the horizon. Like there's such an aspect to parenting young children where it's like every single stage is so fun because like they break down like the walls of like what is now possible.
Right.
But then there's also the things that like you, the parent, have had in your head that like live like on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know why, but like when we were, you know, like expecting with Addison, like the thing that was like constantly on my mind was like skiing with her,
yeah.
Going scuba diving someday, hiking Mount Kilimanjaro. Like these are like the things that like I was like, these are going to be like our like daddy daughter like experiences that
right.
like, we end up doing together. But it's like, you know, some of those are things that we likely won't do until she's like 17 or 18 years old.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, but
further away.
They're further away. So then in the meantime, there's like, you know, we're going out like on your three wheel scooter this weekend.
Right.
You know, and like, and this is the daddy daughter date right now.
Absolutely.
You know, so you've got like all the various phases, but I feel like you can't be far off from your kids being able to like really start to like benefit from your own genuine enthusiasm, your strategery, and your like position to like, most of the time, I would say your skill at board games, it doesn't necessarily, and not that I think you're ever guarded about this anyway, but it doesn't necessarily behoove you to teach like your direct opponents how to be better.
Yeah,
at
how to
the
be
game.
Better. Yeah, than me.
Right.
Yeah. Why would I tell you how to play?
Right. It's like, you know, I get to win and
get
that's
win,
fun,
yeah.
You know?
Right.
Which I think even if you delivered your tactics to most of us lay people, we would still lose to you. However, I feel like you've got the student becomes the master opportunity where you can like just funnel all of your knowledge uninhibited mm-hmm. into them.
Right.
And support them in their
quest
towards greatness.
Towards greatness. Yeah, they'll just not even like card games. That's what will happen.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Can you imagine? It's like it's like the opposite of like the
they want to play Magic the Gathering or something.
Oh, can you imagine?
Oh
man,
I can't even. I can't help you with this.
We just made
this.
Eights of people angry. Okay, so here, quick transition.
Transition.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Uncommon Goods. Yo, the holidays are just around the corner, and this is my personal reminder that it is never too early to start your shopping. And boy howdy, I couldn't be more excited to recommend an annual stop on my own holiday shopping, Uncommon Goods. Ever since I earned my first paycheck in the fish and reptile department of a pet store, gift giving is something I've had a blast with. And my goal has always been to like find that item that somebody didn't even know they wanted, but ended up being like their favorite thing that year. And Uncommon Goods is like a cheat code for this. They curate an incredible collection of things that fit into that like rare crosshairs of actually useful, thoughtful, and wow, I've never seen this before. So here's my current recommendation for winning the holidays: deep sea sand art. We have one of these in our office and our whole team is just constantly huddled around it, watching the calming, unique landscape it slowly makes throughout the day. Like no joke, we have been obsessed with this thing. So check it out now, thank me later. Shop early, have fun, and cross names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/pop. That's uncommongoods.com/pop for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
I actually think this is really funny though, so I don't even know. We came out of transition, but it's still sort of on the same topic. But I am curious because I stumbled across like a news article over the weekend that I was like, wait a second. Like, are prodigies still a thing?
Okay.
Like, and I'm probably going to paint in such aggressively broad strokes here that I'm sure that I'm like starting to take some truths about some things and make them untrue about other things.
Mm-hmm.
But the world of like cinema right now, I feel like is in like a strange place where it doesn't seem like we're still seeing more movies hit like insane box office numbers than like probably what was happening to what was considered a successful movie back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, like when we were growing up.
Yeah.
You know, the like what might be seen as like a failed Marvel movie now is still probably doing $100 million more than like what Dodgeball did in 2003.
Right.
Just to like try to make some basis for comparison. I have no idea if that's true, but that's my rough knee jerk feeling, or mm-hmm. or like Anchorman, or the things that felt like, you know, phenomenons like, yeah. for us growing up. And like, obviously those are kind of niche and funny, random, off the beaten path types of stories. But part of me wonders, like, if you're inside of like the field of like creating art, you know, or starting to like tell stories, like in the beginning, there is probably like the want to reach for the stories that are going to encompass the most people. So like the classic underdog story that we all know and love, like, you know, one of the movies that we love here in Office is Remember the Titans, like, mm-hmm. you know, T.C. Williams, one of the first integrated schools back in the 70s,
50s, 60s,
somewhere in there. Somewhere in there. So decades ago. But like, you know, it's these teams who are, you know, like being brought together that, you know, have like the racial aspect that they're trying to walk through. Like, you know, they're like kind of unique compared to some of the other teams that they're playing against. They're having to overcome personal challenges to become a great team, to, you know, join forces and win, you know, and that's ultimately what ends up happening. It's like a wonderful, glorious story.
Right.
But then there's like the question of like, how many times can you tell the true underdog story and have it be just as sensational, just as wonderful every time? Because at some point in time, it's just like what we've seen with like superhero movies. It's like origin stories are really fun because you're watching how this like downtrodden individual or somebody who's like misguided or, you know, needs something finds meaning in becoming a hero and like walking through those early stages of kind of like fighting crime for the first time and taking down, you know, an adversary who sort of has like a similar skill set to them.
Right.
You know, but then over time, it's kind of like, okay, like we're done with the origin stories. Just kick us off Batman 10 years into being Batman.
Right.
You know, like we get it. You know, we know what it's like. He learns.
Yeah, his parents died. He trained to be a ninja. Now he's a bat.
Now he's a bat. Yeah.
Right. I'm a bat.
Yeah. But like, so sometimes like I wonder what happens as time goes on, like whether or not like, it's like we covered in the early stages of this form of media, like a lot of the things that had just absolute broad mass appeal because everybody kind of feels like an underdog at some point in their life. Everybody can imagine themselves taking on the mantle of becoming like the superhero for the first time, because when they do it for the first time, they're usually not fighting like, you know, an intergalactic Avengers level event. They're right. usually fighting something like in the street,
right?
You know, and it's like, okay, like, you know, this is me versus them and whatever. So it's like, then what you end up with is like, maybe like exploring more like niche corners as time goes on. And it's sort of like, these are like interesting and fascinating stories in their own right, but they maybe don't like hit every single person. Now it's kind of like, okay, like now somebody who's maybe lived like this life path is getting to really, really, really enjoy this story, even if it doesn't make sense to everyone who hasn't.
Right.
Is the rough approximation I'm trying to make. So then you take prodigies, and like if you were to go back like through history as like organized sport was becoming more and more popular, it's easy to think of like the first Super Bowl as being like eons ago. Like that's ancient history or whatever, but like, it's really not. Like it was in the 60s, you right. know? So like, but like the first team that won, I believe, was the Green Bay Packers, coached by Vince Lombardi.
Right.
Who like the now title trophy that you win is the Lombardi trophy.
Right.
It's like he became iconic for being iconic at the very beginning. Uh-huh. And as time goes on, you're going to like witness this kind of thing happen because the sport is going to grow to the point where it becomes like very popular. Like all of a sudden everybody's kind of paying attention to it, but all of that attention breeds all of like the youth programs that trickle down from it.
Right.
So now it's like more and more people are paying attention to what it looks like on the large scale, but we have to build a pipeline to make sure that the large scale can always continue. So then you've got like kids who are like 6 years old picking up a football for the first time. Whereas right. like, who knows, maybe before it was like a high school sport that just, you know, you walked onto the field for the first time when you were 14 and picked it up. And how good can you get by the time you're 24?
Right.
You know, that type of thing. Technology improves, investment improves. There's more focus, all that exists. So then you end up with like ticket to the NHL, for example, like a Wayne Gretzky type situation. So Wayne Gretzky shows up for the New York Rangers and is like this phenomenal hockey player, like not just himself, but like I think he not only had like the most goals, but also the most assists.
Right.
So this is somebody who is literally making everyone on the ice better.
Right.
Michael Jordan, same way, you know, like just it's like when they're out there, not only are they amazing, but they make everyone else amazing. But then those people become the benchmark to what everyone else is then compared to.
Mm-hmm.
So like you might have an exception with Michael Jordan, where like following that, LeBron James shows up as like a high school student who doesn't even go to college, goes straight to the NBA. LeBron James is a prodigy,
right?
You know, and like we're able to like recognize and appreciate that. And for the longest time, there's probably going to be argument as to like who's better, Michael Jordan or LeBron James. They live in different eras, but like blah blah blah, like how do you sort all that? It's hard to do. But so often now, when somebody new shows up, it's like, are they picking up the mantle that the great before them laid out? So like somebody be like, this person's the next Wayne Gretzky. And it's like, they don't get to be Wayne Gretzky for the first time. They have to live still under the mantle of the great that stood before them.
Right.
You know,
yeah, like if LeBron comes in, is he the next Michael Jordan or is he the first LeBron James?
Precisely. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Or even like, you know, you could take in the NFL, just to try to use like super broad strokes again, like Tom Brady, one of the most winningest quarterbacks of all time. He's won the most Super Bowls, all that type of stuff. But almost immediately on his heels is Patrick Mahomes with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right.
And it's like, all of a sudden it's like we went from one absolute great who won all the things. And it's sort of like, when will we ever witness this again? It's like, boom, right now.
Right now.
We will witness it again right now with Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
And now he's won three Super Bowls.
Is it three? Yeah, I think so.
But like been to like more.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't been over time.
Yeah, didn't get the three-peat last year.
Right,
yeah.
Right, yes. So like, but like what I think is interesting about prodigies is what they do for their respective craft, because they become the figureheads who become a tent pole that the entire infrastructure can then like exist around. So like maybe you could make the argument like Caitlin Clark for the WNBA would be like a similar type of thing, where it's like, I don't even know if she's, I'm even fairly certain she's not even the best player in the league necessarily, but her popularity has done something for the sport that has otherwise been hard to achieve.
Right.
People are paying attention. They're selling out games and stadiums and all that type of stuff. All really good things. Then, you know, like you look at the world, and I guess the whole idea behind a prodigy is that they're hard to find. They're rare. They're once in a lifetime, generational talents. And it's hard to know whether or not like we can always appreciate them in the moment as fully and completely as we maybe could or should.
Okay.
So like, for example, I watch Formula One. You watch Formula One.
Yes.
We are currently witnessing my favorite driver, Max Verstappen. And he is like as a driver, like he doesn't have like the best car right now. So he's not necessarily like the most winning, like in this moment, he's not even the most winning in the past decade, but he is like singularly like in a league of his own in terms of like his individual racing ability. Like, put him in the best car and he will win against everybody else if they're also in the best car.
Right.
Would be my argument.
Okay.
But like, he's literally competing against a guy named Lewis Hamilton who literally has more world champions than him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, in this moment, it's really hard to say Max Verstappen is the greatest driver we've ever seen,
right?
Because he's literally on the grid next to someone who has more wins than him,
right? But who loses to him every week?
But who is now in the modern age loses to him every week,
right?
Exactly. And then the other story that I heard over the weekend is another one where you've got like a shadow situation. But do you remember the chef Emeril? He was the one who would say like bam,
bam,
He was like a big TV chef, major celebrity chef, all those types of
sort
things.
Sort of like, like one of like the pioneer celebrity chefs.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes. You know, like somebody who basically helped probably like lift up the entire genre of like the Food Network.
Yeah, there was Emeril. I know like Bobby Flay was a big part of it. Alton Brown was like, everyone's food show sucks. Here's how I'm going to do it.
Right.
Like, listen to me. We can do this. And like, he changed it. The guy who was it who hosts Chop? Ted?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I can't think of his last name now that you say it, but I've watched 1,000 episodes of Chopped.
Yeah, that guy, he like changed so much about the Food Network. He like had so many ideas for like how to do like compelling shows and stuff.
Right. And it, yeah. And it's worked, you know, like when I was in college, I probably watched Food Network more than like ESPN.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I love the Food Network. Like when, you know, when cable was like the main thing, like I would watch Food Network all the time, like Iron Chef and Chopped and... You know, Beat Bobby Flay and all that. Yeah. What was Alton Brown's show? Good Eats.
Good Eats. Yeah.
Good Eats. Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff.
I mean, I would say at least a portion of Good Eats is like, I mean, it was Alton Brown was doing great things with the show, but I think it was an early influence for Super Carlin Brothers and like the tone of voice, the way you speak to the camera and the kind of humor we were using and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, probably not the only, but at least an early inspiration for
sure.
Someone we all kind of gravitated towards and enjoyed and laughed at. Laughed with, not like made fun of, laughed
right.
At.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But the thing that I was reading over the weekend that I thought was, I was sort of like, I don't know why, but I like read this story and I was like, yes, this is awesome. Because you hear a lot about, you know, in the like world of celebrities and well-known names and stuff, like, you know, there's obvious nepotism that's going to happen and people who are given opportunities that, you know, that are available because of who preceded them or whatever. You know, you could take LeBron James's son being drafted by the Lakers so that you could have a situation where a father-son duo are playing on the court at the same time. Like,
right.
The world wants to see that, even if Bronny James is not maybe like of the caliber that would have normally granted him that spot.
Right.
But what I was reading about is that Emeril's son has taken over his restaurant in New Orleans and basically like completely turned it around and like brought it back to like what you would imagine as like the heyday. So like almost like if you've seen like the movie like Ratatouille,
yeah,
where like Chef Gusteau has passed away and like, you know, they had already lost like one star while he was alive. Then like when he dies, they take like another one away because that's like a symbolic thing that they do in the world of chefs, according to the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of Ratatouille. So they went from a 5-star restaurant to like a 3-star restaurant and like Anton Ego is like, no, they're done. Like whatever. And then Remy shows up and helps them like rebuild it. And they become this like wonderful sensation. And, you know, they make Ratatouille and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's Anton Ego's favorite place to go by the end of it.
Yeah.
Spoilers. But
if you haven't seen Ratatouille yet.
Yeah, I know, it's been a minute. So the son has stepped in and it's like one of those things when you might hear that it's like, of course he did, but he is 22 years old.
Wow.
And is like redefining fine dining.
Crazy.
Yeah. Like through this like really cool, like tasting menu type thing at this restaurant in New Orleans. And it's like bringing like flocks of people in, like everybody there is like hyper disciplined and they've got like huge glass walls that like allow the dining guests to like see into the kitchen and like all the meticulous stuff that's like happening. All of the waiters like come out like with carts, like so much stuff is like done like beside the table. Like the whole experience is that over the top excessiveness that like maybe you witness in like TV shows and movies as like what fine dining is like, but you almost never truly experience it. Like,
right.
Like the waiter like putting on gloves to set down your plateware so they don't like smudge the perfectly polished like
right
plate or whatever. And it's like, is it excessive? It's like, of course it is. Like it is too much, but also like in small doses, too much is okay.
Right.
You know, like it's like you're going for this experience and it's like, it almost feels like something that was like gone. But here we've got like a 22-year-old who has like stepped into oversized shoes and is like lifting it. You know, you're talking about somebody who, as far as America is concerned, has been able to legally drink for 1 year.
Right. Yeah. Like
that's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
And I don't know why. Like it filled me with glee just to think that there's like the opportunity to like witness like a new pioneer come in and do remarkable things.
Right. It's like there's, you've been playing it. I mean, it's like, it reminds me of like Moneyball, the movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's like baseball has been baseball for as long as it's been baseball. And it's like, you wouldn't think like there's a different way to play it. Like we figured out the best strategies, but it's like, nope, they found a different way to do it.
Right.
Yeah. Just like, we're going to focus on this one particular stat because this stat translates to runs in a way that for some reason no one else has noticed in, you know, 100 years.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like, you don't need, you don't need necessarily the best players to like hit home runs out of the park. You want to get on base.
Right.
And so like, you know, in like the movie Moneyball, for example, that they give an example of a guy who's got like an unusual batting stance that just lends himself to getting on base a lot because what is supposed to be like a foul qualifies as like a ball. And so it's like, it's not that he's like cracking homers. It's that he stands weird.
Right. It's that he stands weird. And that means he gets four balls and gets the base.
He gets the base. And it's like, you know what? That's, as far as the math is concerned, over like 160 odd games, that adds up.
Right.
You know?
And so, averages are going to average, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Like if that means you're going to win, you know, 80% of the time, then that's what your record's going to look like. And in baseball, that's insane, you know?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, I know that prodigies are singular in their nature. Like, I know that like in some ways it's almost like it's the person who you imagine it's best for is the person who is the prodigy, you know, like who's getting to live the glory of being like someone who's changing the game entirely.
Right.
But also I think that whenever we witness this happen, like I think we're too resistant is maybe what I'm trying to say. I think we're too resistant to the idea of a prodigy. We're too quick at times, I think, to compare them to past greats. But at the same rate, like I know that it's hard not to, because it's a grand compliment to say you're the next Michael Jordan. Like,
right.
Who doesn't want to be compared to Michael Jordan if you're a basketball player and changing the sport?
Right.
It's a very high compliment.
Yeah.
But like, but then there's like the fact that because we're always comparing things to other things, does it take away just from them?
Right.
Is it like not only like you're sharing the spotlight with the person who stepped before you in a way?
Well, I can tell you at the very least from following the Celtics on social media and stuff, getting a little more into like the NBA side of things, that they will post stuff all the time about like their players. And what they will not do that. They won't be like that, or they'll compare it to like other people or whatever, but it is never like in their shadow. It is usually trying to cast former players in the shadow of the new round of people.
Okay.
So like,
That's great. Okay. So maybe I'm like, you know, not properly exposed as well.
Sure. Maybe. And I don't know if like every NBA team is like this, but, or, you know, every sports social media account, but and clearly what they'll do is they'll cherry pick the stats that make their players look good, and to be like, oh man, Jason Tatum has scored this many points in, you know, X number of playoff games, and the only other people to do that are, you know, like, or like he number one in this stat, followed by like Kobe Bryant and, you know, whoever else.
Right, right.
And it'll be like, wow, oh my gosh, Jason Tatum's ahead of Kobe Bryant at this stage of his career. That's amazing.
At anything?
Yeah. At anything. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So stuff like that. It's just like it's never just like, oh my gosh, he's the next Kobe Bryant. It's just like, you know, look how much, it's always like, look how great our player is compared to the people you already think are great.
Right.
Not like they're not living up to them. They're overshadowing them.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I have, I don't know if it's like my own excitement over, and it's probably a lot of pressure. You know, I think it's a lot of pressure that any famous person feels about, you know, like the impact that they're having on their craft and the responsibility that they shoulder by being such an important person that like, on some level, it's not just how you maybe like kick or throw a ball, but also like what type of drinks you have, or like what type of car you drive, or who you know, support in an election or something. You know, it's like,
yeah,
all of a sudden it's like you kind of have to be good at everything all at once, which is like a lot of pressure. But there can also just be like a lot of like a breath of fresh air when it comes to like the excitement about like, you know, this person is new and groundbreaking and revolutionary, and like it's going to change fine dining as we know it. Like,
right.
You know, and it's like, cool.
Like, I know.
I love to live through stuff like this.
Right. Like it takes, I feel like it takes a lot of courage to do stuff like that. And it just like, I feel like it's a good reminder that like, just because things have like, people have made things great and figured out the best way to do things doesn't mean there's not a different wild way to do the same thing that can still be very successful.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yes, I do know. I do know. And so that's the thing. Yeah. It's like, you know, if we keep people in the shadows of the former greats and we're like, oh, maybe someday they'll be as good as any of these people we've just said, like, does that in any way like put a ceiling over them that sort of like now you're trying to live up to? And I mean, I'm sure what I'm describing is like the, you know, unachievable expectations we all feel from something, you know, where it's like you want to be as good as so-and-so, your idol, your icon, whatever the case may be. But like, you know, think about just instead of having like all that noise, all that forest in front of you, if it was just like fresh, clean, open air to just like go.
Right.
You know, like to just to have nothing holding you back, to like not have these comparisons you have to like constantly be like throwing off of, like, you know, the windshield of your visor or whatever. It's just like, just go.
Right.
Just go and be great.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's there's just something wonderful about witnessing that.
And I think, yeah, I totally agree with you.
And I'm excited to watch, like, because invariably, you know, as like Addison and you know, Luke and Nick and Nate and everybody like go and become involved in activities and hobbies, and whether they're, you know, sports or instruments or, you know, whatever they end up doing, you like, and even if it's not them who go on to be the prodigies, like chances are you're going to get to witness some young people who are exceptional at something at a young age.
Right.
Like we sometimes joke, you know, over on our Boxbreaker show, we played, you know, elementary school rec league soccer with a girl on our team named Sierra. And she was like, just very good, you right. know, like yeah. at like a young age. And, you know, it's like, it would just be cool. Like, I feel like if I was our dad going to the games and getting to watch her be good, like even that is cool.
Right.
You know, it's like, wow, this is someone who, like, they're all little kids. They're all 8.
Right.
She is clearly handling, like, she can kick it farther, faster, like,
right.
than everyone else.
Yeah. Like, what is she going to do later on?
I know. Yeah. I wonder what she would say if she knew I've like thought about her like impact on my young life so much.
I mean, it feels like someone we'd probably be able to track down.
It does feel like this would be like an attainable thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, this wouldn't even be as hard as like Carp Girl.
This isn't Carp Girl. You have her name.
We have her name.
Yeah.
First and last. Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, that was my thinking over the weekend. So I have no idea what EJ, hold on. I wrote it down because I wanted to make sure I got it right. Lagasse. So Emeril Lagasse is the original. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right. The original, which also
that sounds right.
As a kid, I always thought it was emerald. Like
the green gemstone.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But it's emerald. But yeah, so EJ Lagasse is a, celebrity chef son in, New Orleans.
Is that Emeril Jr.? Is that what you think his name is?
I bet it is.
Yeah.
Now that you say that, EJ. So literally talking about, like, look at this, not living in his father's shadow.
Has the same name.
The same name, same field.
Yeah.
But no, cool story too, because, you know, obviously, and again, this is like one of those where opportunity, you know, meets talent, I think is really what you've got going on. But this is somebody who, like, at the age of, I think the article said like 8, you know, basically went and had like a meal that was so spectacular that it like inspired him to like chase that. Mm-hmm. And because of who his dad was, he was able to get indoors, that gave him, you know, like the crucible that allows you to become as good as you can possibly be by age 22.
Right.
Which again is like, when I was 22, like if I could like hard boil an egg, like I was like, woohoo.
There's a whole video about you explaining it over and over.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How to Google autofill.
Yeah. How to Google autofill. Yeah. Yeah.
Good times.
Good times.
All right. You got time for one last thing?
Let's do it.
Okay. I have a dumb one to close out with.
Okay. Great. Yeah, okay. I love it.
So you may be aware, there's almost no way not to be, that Taylor Swift has a new album out.
Oh, The Life of a Showgirl?
The Life of a Showgirl.
I've heard of it. Yeah.
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 Have you heard it?
I've heard like, I haven't like sat down personally and listened to it front to back, but the morning it came out, me and Beth sat on the couch and listened to like most of the songs.
Okay.
Yeah.
There is a song on the album called Actually Romantic.
Oh, yeah. I know this one.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like a diss track.
It's a bit of a diss track. I am apologizing in advance if we are contributing in any way to a beef that doesn't actually exist. But the story that I have been told is that this has something to do with Charlie XCX, who is a different artist who made a song that also had something to do with Romantic. And this was Taylor's rebuttal to it,
right?
And it's called Actually Romantic,
right?
It's sort of like very like on the nostrils.
Yeah, it just keeps saying about all these things you keep doing that are kind of negative towards me. It's actually romantic how much you think about me.
Yes, exactly. So, and that's the underlying sentiment. It's that it's sort of like, it's like you think you're being mean to me, but what you're actually doing is thinking about me all the time. Like you
living in your head rent free.
Exactly. Like you can't get me out of your head. And like, isn't that kind of sweet? Like you're basically flirting with me,
right?
Is what's happening. Is like, oh, I'm so flattered. And I feel like this song has so well articulated like a sensation that I also have.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever been able to like take that feeling and sort of like be like, this is why I think what you're doing is like, wrong is the wrong word, but I don't think you're achieving your objective the way that you think you are.
Okay.
So I'm driving down the road yesterday and I like off-road vehicles. Like I drive one, I've had one. My first like real car was an Isuzu Trooper, mm-hmm. and I took it to the literal moon and back. Like that thing was stock top to bottom, and I took it places that like it never should have been able to go. And it was amazing.
It was fun times.
And I quite loved it. But so then within the world, there, you know, certainly are a huge variety of different off-road vehicles that all are going to claim to be the greatest or the best or whatever. You know, Jeep Wranglers are super famous for it. They're great off-road machines, all that type of stuff. But then there's, you know, like the big stuff, like what the Army uses, like Humvees and Hummers, you know, which ends up being like a brand or like the GMC umbrella. And then you've got like the British take on everything, which is going to come from like Land Rover. And so sure enough, over the weekend, I saw an old vehicle that I used to want really desperately as a high school student called a Land Rover Discovery, which is like the really like almost like safari looking vehicle.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Like it wouldn't be like uncommon to put what's called a snorkel on it, which is where you take like the air intake from the vehicle, which is normally under the hood of your car, and you run it up this thing that runs along the side of the vehicle, and it puts it like above the vehicle, like the roof line, so that you can drive through water because you're not sucking in water. You can get the air all the way from up above.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's a snorkel for a vehicle. And so you probably see them all the time, and now you'll see them even more if you weren't aware of what they were before. But Land Rovers, super awesome. I've always loved them. But I'm driving behind one yesterday that was old enough to have like the antique plates on it and everything. But then the tire cover says, Hummer recovery vehicle. And exactly.
That's so funny.
Like basically this Land Rover is like, it got its own, you know, diss wheel cover.
Right. Yeah.
If you will. Yeah. Towards a Hummer, which is basically saying like, because we're so much more nimble, we have to go in to get you out of the tight spots you get your big clunky self into.
Right.
We save you. But also there's a part of me that is like, you know, I'm sitting there looking at this really cool antique Land Rover that like I would have coveted, still do in a way. And I'm like, you're using your platform to talk about the opposition. Like, Just speak for like let your awesomeness speak for yourself, you know,
right.
you don't need to go and, you know, it's like, but then like in the back of my mind, I think we were literally listening to the song, which is probably why I'm putting all these pieces together. I'm like, it's actually romantic that you're thinking about the Hummer this much,
right?
That like, that you're spending your wheel cover time talking about Hummers instead of how great Land Rovers are. Like just,
well, but it's a little bit of both.
It is, but like it's like I wouldn't want to use any part of my antique Land Rover to be talking about a different car.
Sure.
Like it's like, I'm like, this is so preposterous. Like, you know, like, but I think it's because, I mean, this is a personal take 100%. That's just sort of like my opinion. Like, it's like, I would rather like not trash talk, just be good, you know,
yeah.
of your own accord. And like, but like, I think it makes me think about like, you know, in the political world, like there's
oh boy, we're in political ad season right now.
That's exactly it.
It's very annoying.
I hate takedown ads.
Oh, me too. Like, tell me why you're great, not why they're bad.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah that's precisely what I wanted to say. Is it's like, you know, I would love it if we just made takedown ads like illegal. Like, it's just like you can't talk about why they suck. You have to talk about why you're good. And like, it's because we get so in the weeds, and the reasons why, you know, because you've got dirt collectors, like people on each team whose job it is to go through and find a vote that's going to look bad, a sound bite that's going to sound bad. Like, you are literally going and trying to find the absolute worst that this person has ever done and use that as a representation as to who they are as people. And it's like, it's so inaccurate.
It's like, so inaccurate.
It's so out of context.
But it's all you hear.
Right. And it's like, it drives me crazy. But I think it demoralizes the whole spirit of the thing. Like, you know, there's a piece of me that desires this world where we're proud of our leaders.
Right.
You know, like I just described, like, you know, prodigies, like people who've just grown up like wanting to do the right thing. And it's like, how awesome would it be like if we were just like, the best of us, the best person in our society is leading, you know, like who we are. And I don't mean this in necessarily like today or, you know, 10 years ago or 30 years ago or like any specific time frame. I mean all of it, all the time and always, regardless.
Right.
Like, it's like we spend so much time on the attack that we inform both oppositions as to the worst possible, like we figure out how to inform each other on the arguments that each other can make at each other. And they're so unproductive and they're so useless. And I know that these things work so well, otherwise we wouldn't do it. But it's like, it drives me crazy.
It is so frustrating.
And so like, I love, and I'm sure on some level that what's truly happening, if I had to imagine with Taylor Swift and this song, is that it is maybe as much as it is like an air quotes diss track, I suspect that she is talking about this kind of thing. Because she seems like that kind of person who's...
Well, it's like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure it might be directed at a single person, but it also casts a wide net and can mean what it means to the listener.
To the listener, exactly.
Yeah.
And so I suppose this would be like my interpretation of it, is that it's just sort of like, guys, let's stop being so romantic out there.
Right.
You know, like let's stop talking about each other so much. You know, like, why don't we just talk about like our accomplishments and like the good we want to do, and not like
all the songs about that too, man.
No, I know. No. I'm not criticizing Taylor Swift. Like,
yeah,
I'm frustrated with the wheel cover and the takedown ads and like all of the,
yeah,
you know, like even
the wheel cover feels like sports to me almost.
Like talking, you know, trash about, like, you know,
it's like the same as having like, you know, Yankees or UVA toilet paper, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and that's fair. That's fair. You know, like on a very small, like personal scale where it's like in your bathroom that has like the Red Sox shower curtain to accompany it or whatever. It's
sure.
Like, that's hilarious.
That's hilarious.
You know?
Yeah.
Then it's like, then it's just like an individual, like just sort of, you know, but sure. like out in the wild, you know, like if I were going to like a sporting event, I think I would be so much more likely to make a pro Virginia Tech poster than I would be an anti UVA poster.
Yeah.
Which would be like our key rival in the state of Virginia. So University of Virginia versus Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
But like do you know what I mean? Like I would rather go out there and be like, you know, Kyren Drones is amazing than like, you know, your quarterback sucks.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I understand. I know what you mean. I think, I mean, and that's fair. I would do the exact same thing. I'm wearing, you know, a support Hokie shirt, not a like dis UVA shirt.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, but for the sake of the car, it's on the car. It's relevant to the, you know, like I wouldn't put a UVA sucks bumper sticker on my car, but their diss is about other cars on their car.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
It'd almost be weirder for them, like in their bathroom, to have like a Hummer suck. You know?
Oh, sure.
You know, like, okay, like that's great, but now you're putting it in the wall. Like that's nothing, you know,
like this isn't the time. You're
framing this in your house. Like that's, you know, that feels like a little more romantic.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
At least it's on the car.
But like when it ultimately comes down to how the average person feels about Land Rovers, do you think that having like a really cool built out Land Rover does more for enthusiasm towards Land Rovers? Or do you think that the wedge that exists between Land Rovers and Hummers makes you like Land Rovers more?
That is a great question. I didn't even know there was beef between the two.
Well, and to be honest with you, this is like, as far as I'm concerned, a rivalry that I learned about for the very first time on Sunday.
As far as I'm concerned, at this point, despite their rugged origins, Land Rover and Hummer both exist as luxury vehicles at the moment.
They do.
And they are not being, despite their capabilities, are not being put to those uses almost ever.
Almost ever.
Almost ever.
Yeah. They're, yes.
So it's so to me, this is not a general public diss. It is a diss for the benefit of the other Land Rover owners.
I see.
Who see it and are like, I'm with you.
I get you.
This is like people who are already in the club.
Ah.
You know? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're less interested, I think. They're more about impressing their friends than they are, I would say. I'd say they're trying to impress other Land Rover owners.
Okay.
Yeah.
People who are already on, like, in on the know.
Who are in on the know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Just reinforcing their own position.
Exactly. Yeah. They're echo chambering, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Maybe in a less hostile way than usual echo chambers.
Sure. Sure.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. But anyway, I thought it was funny because I was like, okay, this, like, actually romantic song, I feel like, is like, this is the sentiment I feel towards this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, this is overall better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Anyway. Okay. Well, I think that was everything I had for today. So if you guys have any feedback, you can send it over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Or if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. Links to all that in the description down below. But otherwise, until next time,
pop up.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager. And the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.